Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Good afternoon, Jacksonville. My name is Scott Young. I'm hosting in for Candace Thomas today as the Consumer Law Hour comes to you this Saturday afternoon. 855-765-1045, the number to call. If you've got questions, Chuck and Eddie Farah from Farah and Farah are here to give you some legal guidance and insight. 855-765, the number to call. Excuse me, 855-765-1045, the number to call. Chuck, Eddie, how are you guys doing today?
Really good, Scott. Thanks for backing us up today.
Happy to be here, guys.
Yeah, we need to help, man.
But, so what's going on?
Well, want to kind of talk about a couple of three legal cases that came up, and most recently, that kind of affect you as a consumer or if you're a business owner. And I get these questions all the time from friends of mine who own small businesses or big businesses, and they're worried about their liability. You know, it's hard to, in this particular case, it revolves around uneven sidewalks. You always see them, you're walking through your neighborhood, and, roots, you know, create conditions where the sidewalks are not even. You can be, not just in your neighborhood, you can be anywhere in front of a place of business, your place of work. You may have a sidewalk in front of your particular establishment. They can be anywhere. So uneven sidewalks, we know, can be anywhere. And people fall on these uneven sidewalks. They're walking and their heels get caught on them or their toe gets caught on them. They fall down and they feel that they need to make a claim. And what is the law when it comes to that type of action? And generally, in Florida, if it's open and obvious, if the sidewalk is uneven, you can see it. If it's open and obvious, that removes the requirement of the landowner to warn you of the dangerous condition.
Meaning it's sort of look out for yourself kind of a thing?
Well, it kind of that. Not really, because the fact that it's open and obvious removes the requirement that the landlord warn you of the danger. If it was a hidden danger, let's say you had some other condition in the store that was hidden and not open and obvious, you would have a duty to warn the customer or the invitee, the person coming to your property, that there's a dangerous condition. But when it's open and obvious, you don't have to warn them of the dangerous condition, but you still have a duty to maintain the premises. So just because it's open and obvious, just because, 99 people walk by there and see it and avoid it, and one person doesn't see it and falls, doesn't mean that you're off the hook as a landowner, because you still have a duty to maintain the safe premises. And because it's foreseeable that somebody coming onto your property or walking on your sidewalk will not see the open and obvious and fall. Now, that doesn't mean that person is automatically entitled to compensation. They still have to prove that, there was a dangerous condition, and they have to prove they were injured, and they have to prove that, you failed to maintain a safe premises. But still, it opens you up to liability. And in Florida, because you have that comparative fault statute, the court or the jury can divide the fault between the landowner and the person who's injured. So the jury may rule that, yes, it was open and obvious, but at the same time, the landlord knew it was there. He should have done something about it. It's been there for a long time. Maybe other people have fallen there. So therefore, we're going to divide up the liability between the person who's injured and the landlord. And in Florida, you can do that. It's a sliding scale. The jury could find that you as the injured person were 90% at fault, and in that situation, the landowner would just pay 10% of your injuries. So it can go 50-50, 90-10, 75-25, whatever the jury comes up with. But uneven sidewalks, you see them everywhere. We get calls on them all the time. It's hard to go to unless it's a brand new, almost a brand new shopping center or a brand new strip mall. It's hard to go anywhere and not find an uneven sidewalk in Florida.
Now, here's a question. Supposing you're walking through a residential neighborhood. Some of them have sidewalks running down near the street. whose responsibility is it to maintain that sidewalk? Is that a city property in that case, or is that the property owner?
Well, and who owns it?
It's whoever owns it. If it's a city-owned property, then the city has a duty to maintain it. And when you deal with the city, it's a whole different situation on these uneven sidewalks. Again, you got to prove.
Sometimes someone may not own it, but they have control over it and are bound to maintain it. So that person could also. So it's not strictly the owner. I mean, you could find an agreement between the owner and the user of the property where the user is responsible to maintain it. Mm-hmm. And so.
Yeah. So, I know in my neighborhood, they've shaved down. The sidewalks are uneven, and they've gone through the neighborhood. They've shaved them down and ground them down to make them level with each other. I guess some roots have pushed them up, which is a good move. That shows they're on notice. That shows somebody must have reported it, and they're looking out for it.
The fact that it's open and obvious goes to the comparative negligence of the person that's injured, and they become difficult cases if the condition is open and obvious.
I guess we got some phone calls.
Yeah, we got a couple of callers lined up here. George from the West Side, our first caller this afternoon, wants to know if you're able to sue for punitive damages in small claims court. George?
Hey, George.
Yeah. Hi.
Hey, George.
Can you sue for punitive in small claims court?
What case? Like a breach of contract? What kind of case is it?
It's actual malicious destruction of property.
Okay.
Destroyed effects.
Okay. Here's my knowledge of small claims court, or not small, but county court, is limited to damages $15,000 and under. All right. So you're limited. The reason why, if under 15, I doubt if you'd be able to get punitive damages. Okay, because you're limited. In small claims, you're limited to $15,000. So, that would be the extent of what you could recover typically. Now, if you have an attorney, you can get attorney's fees over $15,000. If you hire an attorney and you end up winning and the judge makes the other side pay your attorney's fees, you'll get your limit up to $15,000 and then they'll have to pay your attorney's fees also. The good thing about county court is that the rules are a lot less stringent. And a lot of people handle cases on their own because the judges are more understandable when it comes to rules of evidence and getting things admitted into evidence, hearsay, and things like that. So, I think it'd be difficult for you to get punitive damages in the type of case you're talking about.
Okay. And the other thing is, if you go and say circuit civil and you get a judgment in your favor, then if you want to go for attorney's fees and costs, or just costs, because you did even a circuit civil yourself, costs and fees, because you maybe had an attorney help you with part of it, but then the attorney got off, you have to get a judgment first before you enter a request for fees. If the original complaint did have what we call a payment prayer to recover fees.
What do you mean? You had an attorney on the case?
Yeah, I had, and he left.
He pulled out. Okay, he pulled out.
So I'm going to finish it myself.
Uh-huh.
Really a slam dunk, but here's the deal. If I win, and the original complaint prepared by the attorney did have what you call a payment prayer, and that the court award all fees and any other relief as the court may deem reasonable, so the question is, do you actually get a lawyer told me you have to get the judgment first, and then you could ask for the fees.
You have to win. You have to win. Now you can only you'll get your costs, like filing fees and depositions, to get your attorney's fees back. Did you have a contract with this person you sued that said whoever wins gets attorney's fees?
No, again, this is. Destruction, and it's actually trespass ejectment and damage to fence and stuff like that.
Okay, well, is there a statute that your attorney sued under that allows for attorney's fees? Because some statutes say that you can get attorney's fees if you are the prevailing party under this statute. Like, did you file just a general negligence, or did you file, like, something under...
It was three counts. It was... trespass was count one, Count two was ejectment, and count three was declaratory judgment.
Okay. I don't know. I don't know if you can get attorney. Maybe under the deck action, the declaratory judgment, you maybe get some attorney's fees under that statute. But you'd have to get a judgment first. I mean, you paid your, I'm assuming you paid the lawyer some money, right?
Right.
And you want to get that back, obviously.
Right.
That's part of it. Yeah.
You file a proposal.
You got to get a judgment first. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. You got to win. You got to win. And then you got to go back in front of the judge. He'll give you the costs. The attorney's fees may be a different story, you know?
Yeah. Okay. And then, have you ever done malicious prosecution? A civil case for malicious prosecution?
No, but I know of them. I am familiar with them. It's where somebody tries to allege you've committed some sort of criminal act, and they know the facts behind it are not true. Is that where you're coming from?
Yeah, actually, he came on my land. He assaulted me. He said I assaulted him. He tried to get them to prosecute me. They tried. I got a Stand Your Ground Immunity Award, okay,
right,
under the criminal case. And now I go after him for malicious prosecution and bring the criminal case.
Yeah, but you don't want to be in county court for that.
I know. I got three things going on here.
Yeah.
But that was the third one. Now, the question is, do you know anybody who would want to take on that malicious prosecution? Would you guys be interested?
Not really. Let me tell you what the problem with why attorneys are not so excited about getting involved in that. Because you got to prove your case first by the greater weight of the evidence. You got to prove you're right by more than 50%. It's not like a criminal case beyond a reasonable doubt. Then you've got to you get a judgment. You're gonna probably have a trial. That's gonna cost money, and then you got to try to collect it. And if this guy doesn't have any money, how is the attorney gonna get paid? Who's working on any contingency? Yeah, I mean,
that.
Like what?
Retirement money.
Well, I don't think you can get retirement. You can't garnish that. I want to talk about garnishment in a minute. And you can't get his home because it's homesteaded.
Right.
Unless this guy's got money in the bank or he's got, assets, other properties.
That's not that. Yep.
And you can do an assets check on him and find out what he's got. But
paying a lawyer by the hour.
Yeah, you could probably pay a lawyer by the hour. The problem is you pay a lawyer by the hour, he gets paid whether you win or lose. That's the problem there. So.
Right.
Yeah, you want somebody that's in it with you, that's got their time and their money in it.
Right.
That's why it's difficult to find. If you had an insurance policy, see, insurance policies won't cover intentional acts. If you slipped and fell, that's an accident. Your homeowners will cover you for that. If somebody comes over to your property and you leave something out, somebody gets hurt, that's an accident. You did not intend for it to happen. But when he comes over and attacks you, that's intentional, and his homeowner is not going to cover that.
Right. I understand that.
All right. Yeah. I just didn't know if our listeners understood. That's why I was...
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, but you got some interesting things going on there, George. I mean...
I'd stay on the line if you thought you could give me some names.
Well, I'll tell you what. Leave your phone number with our director. I may know one attorney who may be able to help you. I may even reach out to you on Monday and give you that information.
Sure, that'd be great. Thank you.
Thanks. Good luck.
All right. Thanks for calling, George. We appreciate the call. We're going to take a quick break and come back to Greg in Orange Park in just a few moments. You are listening to the Consumer Law Hour on News 104.5 WOKV. To the Consumer Law Hour on News 104.5 WOKV. Lines are open 855-765-1045. The number to call, 855-765-1045. We're going to Greg in Orange Park. He has some medical malpractice questions. Greg, how are you today?
Hey, Greg.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Early last November, my partner was involved in a very serious car accident on State Road 220. She sustained near fatal injuries. In fact, when they took her to the local trauma, they didn't think she was going to make it. She did make it, and was spent 3 days in intensive care and another 5 days in the hospital, and was released. When they released her, they had missed 6 broken ribs and a pleural effusion. And she was cleared to fly 45 days later to go visit her family. On the flight, she had a very painful episode where, upon arrival out west, she had to be hospitalized again. So now, as you can imagine, we're battling the hospitals and her insurance company on what's covered and what's not. And we haven't even brought up the fact with them yet that they missed the 6 broken ribs and the pleural effusion. So do you think it would be in her best interest to engage an attorney to help us fight this?
Okay, well, okay, first, under Florida law, I don't know anything facts about the accident. Let me just give you let's assume she was not at fault. Somebody else caused the accident.
Well, she was cited, but that was dismissed later.
Okay, because under Florida law, if you cause an accident, you're responsible not for all the injuries, even if there's malpractice involved. So the person who caused the car accident would be responsible for not only the injuries from the accident, but also responsible for any malpractice committed after the fact. I just wanted to throw that out there because a lot of people don't know that.
Yeah, so the at-fault party is responsible for everything that flows out of that accident, which includes malpractice.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So, but in your case, okay, let's just – in your case, you're in a different situation. Malpractice, yeah, I mean, maybe they missed the broken bones. Medicine is not black and white. They were trying to save her life. Broken ribs heal up. I mean, at the end, I mean, they're very painful at the beginning. They cause problems. But all in all, most, at least the ones I've dealt with in our cases, most everybody's healed up from a broken rib and without a permanent injury. So that's an issue that kind of really doesn't give you a lot to go with on a malpractice situation. Secondly, the pleural effusion, again, hopefully she's going to be okay and she's going to recuperate from that. And there won't be a permanent injury from that misdiagnosis. And if there's no permanent injury, it's going to be very difficult to maintain a malpractice claim.
Okay. I mean, we weren't trying to. Yeah, we were just wondering if we could get some, if legal counsel would be helpful in just getting the bills paid. We're not interested in going after a pot of money or anything.
Oh, I know that. So she's got medical bills resulting from the car accident too, though, right?
Correct.
Okay, so this is just more on top of what was before. Okay.
Well, the first thing you got to determine if they were negligent.
You got to get
that out of the way, and then once you determine or somebody determines that, then it's the damages. And actually, the process that legal process you have to go through to even create a claim of malpractice. I mean, you've got to go. You got to hire an expert that can come in, some expert that can say that there was negligence.
Yeah, you have to have a like treating physician. I mean, it's expensive just to get the information to file the lawsuit.
Yeah, just to move forward.
Just to move forward before you even file it. And the damages, even the medical bills, I mean, I know from the pleural effusion, what do you got from the pleural effusion? How many medical bills do you have from that?
Well, they resulted from the 2 hospitalizations. The first one I can understand, but when they cleared her to fly after missing those, and that had the episode on the airplane, which resulted in another immediate hospitalization, there's probably, I don't know, a couple thousand.
Yeah, that's more than an expert. Yeah, yeah. The expert's going to charge you more than that just to get his opinion on an affidavit to review the medical risk. It could be $10,000 for him to review all the medical records and render an opinion.
Gotcha.
So that's why a lot of these cases like you're talking about never get pursued because they're just too expensive to handle.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Good
I
luck.
Appreciate the expertise.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah, this is an interesting law in Florida, and Greg had us bring it up, is that, and we've handled these before. We've had cases where there's a car accident, our client's not at fault, the client gets medical treatment, then all of a sudden there's a medical malpractice component to this treatment. Where after the car accident, somebody does something wrong and, you know, bad things happen. Well, under Florida law, the person who initiated the wrongful conduct, who was responsible initially, is responsible for all the subsequent mistakes. So if you cause a car, God forbid, you cause a car accident, and somebody goes to the hospital and they drop him off the gurney and he breaks his neck, or they operate on the wrong leg or something, you as the at-fault driver in the first accident could be responsible for all those injuries.
Well, we didn't get into it, but it sounds like she may have been initially ticketed and then it was dropped or fought and dropped. She may have a claim against the other driver.
Yeah.
So that could be a way to get compensated for the medical bills.
Right. We didn't really get into that with Greg, but that's something that's probably worth pursuing.
Yes.
Because remember, the accident report is not admissible into evidence to prove who was at fault. So
it goes back to comparative negligence, which maybe we can talk about.
Sure.
Once again, you're listening to the Consumer Law Hour on News 104.5 WOKV.
Helping to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Now, the Consumer Law Hour with Eddie and Chuck Farah on News 104.5 WOKV.
You're listening to the Consumer Law Hour on News 104.5 WOKV, brought to you by Farah and Farah. Our lines are open at 855-765-1045. Again, 855-765-1045. If you've got questions, Chuck and Eddie are here to take your calls. Guys, what's been going on?
Thanks, Scott. Just want to follow up on this last phone call. We just like in the slip and fall cases, these auto accident cases, you can have various degrees of liability. I mean, it's it can be divided up. Liability can be divided 50-50, 75-25, 90-10, and whatever the jury finds. So just because you may have received a ticket, that does not preclude you from filing a claim. A ticket is not admissible in court. The other side, the insurance company, can go to court and say, well, JSO gave you the ticket, right? That's not admissible. The accident report's not admissible. So, I mean, the way the accident happened can be explained based on the evidence and the eyewitnesses who saw the accident. So don't feel like you don't have a claim, or don't feel that you can't get compensated just because you may have received the ticket, because it is not admissible in court to prove who was at fault.
Yeah. I mean, we've had situations where the path our client was driving on was controlled by a stop sign. They had a stop at a stop sign, but they passed through the stop sign, but the vehicle coming from the side created a side collision, but we established that vehicle was speeding. So that's kind of how, so we were able to place some negligence on that other driver.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of a typical example of comparative negligence, where maybe you can place 20-30% on that speeding driver, even though the other driver ran a stop sign.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I mean, the law looks at, in reality, I mean, a lot of times it's more than just one person at fault. I mean, there could be several factors that cause the accident. So anyway, we'll move on to something else right now. I want to get back to a little bit of what I think it was George, that malicious prosecution. You know, malicious prosecution is very difficult to prove. I mean, you've almost got to prove that. I'm not saying he doesn't have a winnable case, but it's a difficult claim to make, because you're stating that, and I don't think George was arrested in any way, so I don't know if he has any damages. He may have a slander claim against a person, because the guy goes down to the station or to the police and alleges some probably something that happened that didn't happen. But for a malicious prosecution case to happen, you have to be arrested. And I think because there are, other than that, what happened? Nothing. So we'll see. I'll talk to him on Monday and see if we can help him out. But the other thing I want to talk about is a lot of times people's wages get garnished. If you're, there people are they owe someone money. There's a judgment that's been obtained. They owe a bank some money. They've been sued. There's a judgment, and the bank wants this money. MasterCard, Visa wants this money, and they want to garnish your wages. Well, Florida has a statute that controls whether or not they can garnish your wages. And the statute reads, and it's very short, or I'll just read the pertinent portion. A person who is providing more than half of the support for a child or other dependent and bearing additional responsibilities for support of dependents are exempt from having their wages garnished. So if you're supporting a minor child or a spouse or a dependent mother who's living with you. And your support provided more than half of their support, your wages cannot be garnished, no matter how much money you're making. The issue becomes a lot of people are independent contractors. You know, they're not getting a W-2 form. They're not getting a wage, and they're just classified as independent contractors. If you're an independent contractor, then they can garnish your wages because you're not an employee. The statute talks about being an employee. So if you're working for Lyft and you're working for Uber and you're getting a 1099, or you're working for Amazon and you're just getting a 1099 and you owe, there's a judgment against you, those wages can be garnished because you're not considered an employee. A lot of times people who are getting a 1099 and may be considered independent contractors are really employees. Just because you're getting a 1099 doesn't mean you're automatically an independent contractor. Under the law, it's basically about control. The more control the employer has on what you do is the closer you to become an employee, whether you're getting a 1099 or not. So even if your wages are being garnished because everybody thinks you're just an independent contractor, based on the facts, you may be classified as an employee and still and have those wages and be able to stop that garnishment. So we had this come up. A friend of mine had to go through it, so we did a little research and found that answer out for him.
Well, that's an interesting circumstance because you think about the idea of that being a certainly a financial or at least a taxation distinction between a W-2 employee and a 1099 employee.
Yeah, see, a lot of employers like to classify people as independent contractors for various reasons. I mean, there's some liability issues. You know, there's no matching of Social Security. It saves them some money. But just because you want to classify someone as an independent contractor doesn't make them that. The IRS comes back, and they will look at your circumstances, what kind of control you had over the employee. And there's been a lot of litigation with Lyft and Uber about this, that, you know, they classify them as independent contractors. But, you know, what kind of, based on the control these guys have and so forth, that, I mean, I think, I don't know if anybody has considered these drivers as employees, but there have been lawsuits filed trying to do that. So it's all based on the facts of the case, not what your employer says you are. So if your wages are being garnished and your employer considers you an independent contractor, you still have a basis to fight it based on this statute.
Our lines are open, 855-765-1045. If you've got questions, Consumer Law Hour taking your calls, 855-765-1045.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's summertime and, you know, people are out and about, or it's almost summertime. School's almost out. To me, summertime starts when school is out.
For me, it starts when the temperature goes above 72.
Oh, yeah, to me, I always remember summer as no more school, but I know it's some other time. But anyway, there's a Florida statute 375 is an interesting statute because, you know, a lot of times, what is the liability for those people who enter your property to hunt, fish, or for other recreational purposes? I mean, what liability do you have? I know we were, I remember being down on the Suwannee River, and a lot of these homeowners, these properties that have these rope swings on them where you can swing and, you know, jump into the water and so forth, and you just kind of show up and use them. I mean, they're not part of the state park system or anything, but and this really applies to state parks also. And generally, the rule or the statute in Florida is that if you give out your property for free, and let's say you have a piece of property that somebody is fishing on, maybe somebody is hunting on that property, maybe somebody is using your rope swing, and you're not charging for that, and people are using it for recreational purposes, you really don't have any responsibility to what happens on the property. Unless you deliberately or willfully hurt those people. But generally, you're absolved of liability by opening up your property for free. That's the statute. It's 375.251 in Florida. Georgia has a similar statute, and I've seen other statutes around the country because we've dealt with these issues before. What gives you the immunity is the fact that you're not charging for that property.
On the other hand, if you're charging and you're a state
or is yours the private
or private
or the state?
You've got liability.
Yeah.
Unless there are waivers signed. I mean, there are ways to.
Yeah. You can ways to get around that.
Yeah.
Now, even though you are opening up your property for free, you know, if you're still liable, if you deliberately, willfully, or maliciously injure somebody.
That's a tough burden.
Yeah, that's a tough burden. It's almost like the malicious prosecution that I think George was talking about. Those are difficult cases to prove. That's why really I haven't heard of anybody really maintaining those cases. I know there's some cases out there where people have been successful, but they're difficult to pursue. Okay,
we got Mitch. We've got another caller on the line. We've got Mitch from the West Side with some concerns about wet floors. Mitch, you're on with Farrah and Farrah.
Hey, man. Great show.
Hey, Mitch. Thanks.
Okay. this is a crazy one. Follow a subcontractor working some water lines or street stuff for the DOT. He goes in the store bathroom, defecates on the floor, and I'm friendly with this mom-and-pop place. And I said, hey, man, there's no way you're going to leave this in there. So he gets a couple rags from the woman owner and starts wiping it up, and she mops the floor. If someone fell, could they go after the subcontractor? I mean, he's on tape. The only one that went in the bathroom came back in and caused it to be slippery.
Yeah, that's a good question. He doesn't own. He's just a customer.
Right.
It is,
but I mean, it's proven he walked. I mean, he only walked 40 feet from across the street working on a manhole. He was the only person in there. Like duty? I said, I was right behind him.
I don't think he has a duty.
He doesn't have a duty to maintain the floor.
I mean,
he just has a duty to the floor.
Yeah, yeah. to the floor. You're right. That's an amazing scenario.
I know, man.
Come on, Mitch. I mean,
and it's a true story, and no one fell. But it just made me think, because I asked the woman, I said, why are you mopping? It's not closing time. And the guy was walking out. She goes, he just did this. And I thought, well, you know, that would make it more slippery than soap.
Did somebody tell her about it? How did she know that there was a problem inside?
Yeah, somebody told her. But he was the only one in the bathroom. And I said, right. You know, the most critical thing about this is when you do go into these stores, you get mad at the ethnicity of the person thinking they hate all people. But they don't want you to use their public bathrooms because people do this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, trust me, I've wiped butts for 25 years being a fireman and nurse, and it's no fun, and especially no fun for people who are not trained to do it all their life. So.
Right. That's interesting that, you could not. Now, if the landowner, if she mopped it up, if she didn't mop it up, I mean, it's what we talked about earlier. It's an open and obvious thing. If somebody fell, there could be some liability to the landowner, but you'd have to prove that the landowner knew or should have known of that condition. That's what we deal with when we sue these big box stores. Let's say you sue you go to one of these big box stores and you slip and fall. Just because you fall doesn't mean, or if there's water on the floor, doesn't mean they're responsible. You have to show that the store knew or should have known that water was on the floor. So that could be
a leaking refrigerant or something. Yeah.
Or that maybe the water looks like there's a lot of dirt through it, like people have been walking through it. It was been there for a long time. A banana's on the floor, and it's brown because it's been there so long. You can prove it by circumstantial evidence. But you still have to prove that the landowner or the property owner knew or should have known of that condition.
Gotcha. Great show, man, again. Thanks, thank you.
All right, thanks, man.
Thanks, Mitch.
All right, to God.
855-765-1045, the number to call. Our lines are open. We're going to take another quick break. Again, 855-765-1045, the number to call for the Consumer Law Hour, your opportunity to talk to Chuck and Eddie Farrah. All you need to do is give us a call. We're going to take a quick break and be back with more callers. News 104.5 WOKV. Checking in with Carlos in Mandarin. He's got a question for us.
Hey, Carlos.
Carlos, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hey, I got a question. I got a personal property easement issue with the city. I have the edge of my driveway. I have it's starting to crack, and it's just above the drainage ditch that the city provides. My issue is who's responsible for repair on my driveway.
Is it your driveway or is it on city property?
No, it's on my driveway, but the easement is at the bottom of the ditch but to the bottom of my driveway, and it's starting to crack, and it's starting to, you can see the slant down, and it's only part of the.
Okay. Okay. I'm not a real estate lawyer, but the easement just allows the city to access the property. I mean, if it's your driveway, I would assume that you would have responsibility to repair it.
Okay.
I mean,
all right, because I called the city to straighten out the drainage. The erosion is on next to the sidewalk, and all they do is throw some dirt on there, and then next big rain that comes by, it just flushes down to the drainage.
It happens. So if you repaired the driveway, it would just happen again. What you're saying?
Well, I haven't repaired a driveway. It's on the where the city sidewalk is too. They throw some dirt on there and pack it down. And then when the next big rain that comes in, it just erodes again. And I'm trying to get them to do the same right where the drainage ditch is, because it's just the erosion. You can see the slant where the drainage, where the water's draining, where it's eroding on the edge of my driveway.
Is it the erosion that's causing the driveway to collapse?
Yeah.
I mean, are they repairing it every time you call them?
All they do is throw some dirt on the edge where the city sidewalk is at, but they don't take care where the edge of my driveway is. They don't do nothing of that at all.
Have you asked them if you could repair that on your own and see what?
Well, that's my next question. If I do repair it and I do bring it my way and put cement around the drainage ditch, and the city don't like it, are they going to make me tear it down?
Because you deal without a permit. If a permit's required, I'll tell you, Carlos. This is an area out of our area of expertise. Why don't you leave your phone number? I know somebody that may be able to help you, and I can call you Monday and give you that information.
Why? Thank you very much.
All right, thanks. Yeah, that's an interesting question, Chuck, because he wants to do some construction work in an area that he doesn't own, owned by the city, because it's affecting his property. We'll have to see how that works. Okay. Oh, maybe we'll find out for everybody. We got another phone call, Judith, I think. Do we have?
Looks like we've got time for one more call.
Go ahead.
Judith, I see Judith online too. Judith?
Hey, Judith.
You're on with Farrah and Farrah.
Hi. Sure. Again, my name is Judith. And, guys, I actually grew up with you on Fairfax.
Okay, very nice. Good days
here.
I have
a quick question. Exactly. A quick question. I had gastric bypass in 2002. The doctor put a mesh band around my esophagus. It's now eroded into my esophagus, so I cannot hold anything at all. No food. I throw up everything. Is that something that's actionable? I'm not looking for money. I just want it removed.
What is the doctor? I mean, are they offering any type of treatment to repair it?
No, well, he doesn't do it. He's referring me to Bull and Groover to have them do it. But I don't want to have to deal with the copay of my 80% health insurance to have it done.
I mean, I know there's some, and we're kind of involved in some of the hernia mesh cases.
It could be a products liability situation.
How long did you start having problems? How long was it?
I started having problems about 2 years ago, but the doctor, I actually talked to the doctor that did the surgery a couple of days ago, and he said that he's had to remove hundreds of them or have them removed through this guy that he's working with at Bowling Groover. But still, this guy has to be paid, and the hospital has to be paid. So he's aware that this issue has created a problem.
Okay. Judith, why don't you leave your phone number, because... I'm not familiar with those types of mesh cases, but I know the hernia mesh cases are still going forward. Leave your phone number with our director, and I'll be in phone contact with you on Monday.
All right, super.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Once again, thanks to Greg, George, Mitch, Carlos, Judith for being our callers today. Thanks for Chuck and Eddie coming in for Consumer Law Hour. My name is Scott Young, hosting in for Candace Thomas today. Our producer today, Tom Robinson. We appreciate you listening to the News 104.5 Ask the Experts Weekend, Consumer Law Hour every Saturday. Our continuing coverage of the Boeing 737 crash at NAS will continue through the day as you're listening to News 104.5 WOKV.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.